Hey, this is Matthew Lindley, and you're listening to That Much Further West podcast.
I start the show. Hey, welcome into That Much Further West.
And I'll fucking end the show.
Oh,
Hey, welcome into That Much Further West. I'm Eric.
I'm Mike.
I'm Phil.
And that's all I got. Go ahead.
We went left before we even got on the air, so this is all preordained.
It sounds a lot better than where it was about 5 minutes ago.
World class radio.
Yeah.
Who's with us, Eric?
Matthew Lindley. Hi, Matt.
Hey, guys.
Welcome. Yeah. I even turned on his microphone. That's on top of my game. Yeah.
Nice. He's ready to go.
You guys need to look into doing like video podcasts.
No,
as well, because the
no.
mad dash to the microphones as the song was ending was exquisite.
No. You know, camera adds 15 pounds. I don't need to add another 15 pounds.
I didn't open my beer yet.
Because I did that on there we go.
Now it's a party.
Yes.
Matthew, we just heard a new song called Slamming Doors.
Yes.
Off your new record coming out.
Yeah.
That sounded really good, buddy.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Wow. Killer, bud.
Do you want to talk about the album and what's going
on? Sure. The album is called Late Bloomer.
Nice.
October 8th, Secret Society. We birthed this thing into the world.
All right.
We recorded it. God, it feels like a year ago. You know,
that's the way it always is. Right.
You know, that process of finishing this thing and fretting over it, and then beginning the second part of the process, which is the finishing part, you know, and then the promotion part, and then the getting the show ready part, and so it. God, I'm going to sound like such a misogynist saying that. Cut this out later if you want. But it does feel like you're birthing something. I have gestated this thing and fretted over this thing for almost a year. And now we're putting it out. And quick sidebar. There was a great little like Facebook meme that was the six stages of creativity. Stage one, this is awesome. Stage two, this is tricky. Stage two, this is shit. Or stage three, this is shit. Stage four, I'm shit. Stage five, maybe this is okay. Stage six, it's awesome again. I'm at the tail end of five. Hopefully by October 8th at Secret Society, I'll be meandering my way into six. But I'm not there yet. But I'm very proud of it. I think...
As you should be.
It's the record I think I've always wanted to make. And
That's awesome.
I finally got it done.
Good. Very nice. Fantastic, man. And who are you playing with there that night?
That night's going to be us, and then it's going to be Bad Assets and the Lowbones.
Lowbones.
Mm-hmm.
Who's in the Us band?
The Us band is Matthew Lindley, and then it's Charlie Adams on guitar, Wilson Carr on bass, and Michael Doering on drums.
And is that the same band you've had since the Paper Lion record came out? What was that, 3 years
the
ago?
Night of that release. That was Wilson's second show with us on bass, and he's been with us ever since.
Nice pickup, by the way, because Wilson is fantastic.
I adore my band. I adore my band so much.
You should. They're great.
Mike on drums, Mike Doering is absolutely my consigliere.
You guys have been together a while.
We've been playing music for about 10 years now.
That's cool.
He moved to Portland pretty close to the same time I did, and it was one of the situations where I had left Spokane, I had broken up the band that was there, and I was playing solo shows and not getting into the shows I wanted to be on, and knew I needed to put a band together, and happened to know somebody who was like, I've got a band, and we'll just back you up, too, and Mike happened to be the drummer in that band, and so,
Instant friend. Right on.
Charlie had came to us... he was in Scotland Bar and the Slow Drags, and then at the time he was playing in a band called Whiskey Music. And he had also just recently joined Future Historians, who he still plays with. We met him at a Halloween party, and it turns out that like a couple other things were slowing down and he needed another band, and our guitar player, Dean Kateri, one of my really, really tight friends till this day, was transitioning out of playing with us, and Charlie was like, I friggin' love you guys. Let's play music together. And like it's one of those like the rehearsal / audition experience where the dude just like shreds your face off within 3 minutes. You're like, yeah. Nice. Oh, you know,
you're hired.
Stay cool. It's like a first date. It's like, stay cool, man. Stay cool. Yeah. God damn it. I want you in the band so bad. Stay cool. Yeah. So, you know, that was the Charlie experience. And then Wilson had just moved up here from Austin, Texas, right around the time when we needed a bass player, and happened to be at the same camp out as Charlie. And he's like, I know a band you can play in.
Oh, nice.
He walked into
nice
rehearsal.
Call Charlie.
Plugged in his bass, and Wilson played the bass riff from I Want You Back by the Jackson 5. And it was another one, stay cool, man, stay cool. But, yeah, I adore my band so much. Nice. They're such good guys. So, yeah, you know, it's been 4 years from that night to now of playing together and honing a sound together and making this record. And, God, I'm proud of it.
How did this record go a little differently from, say, Paper Lion? Because, I mean, did you have other players on that record? Or
we had
same
a different bass player.
Okay.
That was the only real change. We certainly, it was a different experience where we made that record on our own. Bass player had a studio in his house. We made it on our own. We did bring in some friends for advice as far as, you know, the tactical things, the mic placement, the this, the that.
Sure.
This time we went to Sidecar Studios with Johnny Keener and kind of put the production element in his hands.
Oh, nice.
Here are these songs we wrote. Tell me what to do with them.
And you have a rehearsed band now, second time around.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So I guess what was different this time is we really did look at it as a record that was going to be produced, not a demo made in a basement. No offense to our old bass player who produced that record, but this was definitely a different experience.
Right. Cool. How did it go? I mean, was it a great... Did the lads enjoy it? I see you smiling.
Sure.
Yeah.
There were moments where I was maybe a bit testy in the studio. I
can't see that at all.
No, not at all. You seen that video for the Nathaniel Rateleaf song where it takes him like 300 years to make the song. By the end of it, they've all got gray hair and long beards, and it's him being like a jerk.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Okay, I sent that to all the guys when it came out. It was like, I'm sorry. Like, that whole video is parody. There were a couple moments, and Wilson can attest to this. There were a couple moments where it was like, dude, it's going to be fine. It's going to work out. Cool. I might be a little high strung sometimes.
And he's been drinking whiskey, folks.
Right. Yeah. I have been.
And he's still
delicious, delicious whiskey.
Delish.
Well, when in Rome.
All right.
Yeah.
Or in the helm.
Mm.
And I'm sorry, where did you do all the recordings for this?
Sidecar Studios, Johnny Keener from Johnny and the Bells. Okay. Great local musician, great guy, great producer. Really cool experience. Nice little studio in kind of a mother-in-law spot.
Gotcha.
And just such a cool experience. I've never recorded an album in anything that ever felt like a studio. And I'm glad that streak kept up with this record, even though it was like in this cabin, you know, by this house, it still felt like I was recording in a house. And that's how I've recorded everything I've ever recorded. And I kind of like that, the homey feeling to it. I don't know. It calms me down. Obviously not enough if you ask the guys in the band. So the whole experience of recording with Johnny, and Johnny is just like this, I don't know. He's just ball of energy, and he hears the right thing, and he'll, you know, to have him walk out of that engineering room and be like, yeah, that was good, but one more. I heard that a lot of times. Are you sure that's the one? I think we got one more. And they just kind of turned around and walked back in. And he absolutely got the best out of us.
Nice.
Over the course of those like 2 weeks that we recorded. Nice. Yeah.
I bet we hear one.
I love to hear one.
Yeah. Want to hear one?
Straight out of the mouth.
Straight out of the mouth. Okay. Oh. I have to put my night gear on first.
Yeah. No snoring while you're playing.
It's called Late Bloomer. Thought it'd be this rough. You can get hooked on anything if you try hard enough. I hit a Jones for calling my own bluff. Couldn't get enough. I always thought it'd be just fine. You can
can get burned out on the best of times. I've come here from the back of the line to take what's mine. Always last to hear the rumor. Chalk it up to be Italy. Tonight and we ran away. I'm running short on reasons to stay. This way.
Matthew, very nice, buddy.
Thank you.
Thanks for sharing that with us. That was
great,
a beautiful song.
Yeah, beautiful.
Yeah. Catching some Roy Orbison there when he was doing that, actually.
Big influence, actually.
Perfect.
Yeah. Never in a million years will I sing like Roy, but
right.
That was definitely car trips growing up.
Yeah.
My father, David Lindley, huge Roy Orbison and Buddy Holly fan. And
perfect.
Yeah, Roy Orbison was definitely something we shared in the house. That was one of my first real big, I guess, you know, everyone remembers that first thing, like what dad played in the car. And for me,
sure.
It was definitely Roy. Huge. I couldn't imagine just the kind of, you know, the crooner, but it was still country and it was still break your heart. Like just Roy's music murdered me. And then, you know. Definitely with me and my father, like the Traveling Wilburys became very much a bonding point because it's like, these are dudes that I like and they're playing with dudes that you like and let's listen to them together. They're on MTV and you can watch it and not get
That's
mad
awesome.
At me.
That's awesome.
So, definitely. Yeah. I really appreciate that. Yeah. Roy Orbison was a big part growing up.
Cool.
Yeah, music in the car.
Yeah, totally. We all got that story for sure.
That's huge.
So, songwriting process, are you a lyrics first person, music first? Like, how do you go about it? Or do you bring an idea to the band and you guys kind of all flesh it out together?
I guess it's lyrics first. I'll have little snippets of ideas of lines that just sit in my head for years, and then I'll sit and I'll come up with, like, I was like, oh, that'd be cool. And then something will pop in there and, you know.
Lyrics to melody.
Lyrics to melody, yeah. So I guess it's a little of both. Definitely I have, and I've actually started now, like, this is going to sound so dorky, but there's that software OneNote that you can get on that comes with, like, Windows now. It's like a note-taking software, and it just saves it. And you can put it on your phone. You can put it on anywhere. I've taken to, like, having one of my little pages on OneNote is, like, lyric ideas. Because so many times in my life, I come up like, God damn, that'd be a good line. And then I never write it down, and then it's gone. So I haven't written anything based on stuff I've put in there yet. But it's like, if something comes up, I definitely put it in there. Because there's so many songs I've written over the course of writing songs of some line that just, like, bounced around in there.
Rod, I got a lot of ruined poems on bar napkins, got drinks spilled on them.
Right? There's that too. I got struck with a line once, and I decided I would text it to myself, and I accidentally texted it to my mother. I was at a concert at the time. It was like, 11:30 at night. The next morning, she's like, what the hell did that mean? And I was just like, oh, that wasn't meant for you. It's a song I'm trying to write. And the next line is, what girl's that about?
Moms always know. They know. Yeah, which girl's that about?
So when did you get to performing, brother?
When did I get to performing?
Yeah. High school?
Yeah. Probably before then. Before mentioned, my mom likes to tell the story. When I was a kid, as a Christmas gift one year, I got a toy logging truck. You know, and it had logs you could put in the back. How very Northwest, right? I took one of the logs and I put tinfoil around the end of it and interviewed everyone around the campfire at our family property in North Idaho. I just walked around the campfire and interviewed them. I think I was like, I don't remember this. My mom tells me the story, but I think I was like four.
You're like a young Bob Costas.
Right. So I've probably been a ham. I've probably been a ham since I hit the ground running. So
can't see it.
No, not at all. So, I mean, I would, you know, show and tell, I would get up and I would sing for people. Worst mistake my mom ever made was hearing me sing to myself as I was doing homework. She's like, you have a really good voice. I'm like, I do? I'm going to do this all the time. It's over. Nice. I started playing trumpet in fifth grade. Like, I wanted to play music. I wanted to play instruments. And started playing guitar when I got to high school. And started playing in front of people while I was in high school.
So what's your discovery of cool music moment?
My discovery of cool music moment, oh. God, it's going to be... Oh.
Maybe there's two of them.
It's going to be... There's two.
Go ahead.
The first one's going to be so damn cliche, though.
We love it.
Going through the parents' records and listening to Sgt. Pepper for the first time.
Come on now, yeah.
I was like, wow, that's cool. Look at all those people on the cover. I should listen to this. What the hell is this?
So Beatles?
Beatles and Springsteen. Around that same time, my family bought our first car that had a tape deck in it, and we drove to Kmart, and we bought Michael Jackson's Thriller, and we bought Born in the USA, and we spent a summer listening to Thriller and Born in the USA over and over again on our numerous car trips. And the joke I always make when I tell that story is if my parents ever worried that I would still be trying to do this thing with my guitar at 38 years old, they should not have introduced me to Bruce Springsteen and Michael Jackson at 7 years old.
Their fault.
Because it's obviously over. It's right. Their fault. Right. It's probably not a bad thing that it's their fault. I'm not saying that as a negative. But
and Bruce became a huge influence.
A huge influence.
Yeah. What is it about the guy?
You know, the thing about Bruce, the thing that hits me about Bruce Springsteen is whenever I feel like whenever I listen to too much Dylan or too much Beatles and feel like what I write isn't poetic enough, or I listen to somebody like Josh Ritter and feel like I haven't read enough to either understand what I'm listening to or write like that, I can listen to a guy like Bruce that just tells a story in linear language, and it's just as beautiful, and it will make you cry or it will make you run through a goddamn wall every time. And it doesn't have to be, it doesn't have to quote Edgar Allan Poe, and it doesn't have to, I'm not kidding. Like, I absolutely, like, Josh Ritter's one of my favorite people on earth. And there are times when I feel like I'm not smart enough to listen to his records. Sometimes the same with Bob Dylan. Sometimes the same with the Beatles. Some, you know, or, but the thing about Bruce is he just tells a story. Independence Day on the River is just a guy sitting across the table from his dad trying to figure each other out. And there's no flowery language in there. Not that flowery language isn't friggin' awesome when it's on a record, but that's just a guy across the table from his dad. And I was like, that's kind of how I figured out I know how to write. And that's probably how I'm always gonna write. And it's okay. Because that's amazing. And that song made me cry twice on one tour, so it must be all right. You know what I mean? So I think that's what always hit me about Bruce.
And you got up, you started performing, and got a lot of sweet gigs. just tell me about, like, how those things have influenced your playing going forward.
Well, actually, let me tell you a different story real quick. Because band that I had in Spokane before I moved here was a wonderful band, but they were very much kind of a power pop band. As time went on, I wanted more twang. I started to discover things. I went to Farm Aid in Pittsburgh in 2002, and I found this band called the Drive-By Truckers, and I'm like, what the hell is that up there right now? I got to open for Sunvolt at a festival. I watched Jay Farrar get off a bus. I watched a huge Hammond and a Leslie get being ported off a truck, and I'm like, and then watching them later, I'm like, what the hell is that up there? That's not what I usually listen to. But maybe it was. Some of the stuff I listened to in high school was still had that to it, even though it was poppy. It's a bad word, a couple of bad words these days. But Counting Crows had a pedal steel and a mandolin. You know what? There's a lot of songs I wrote because of those guys, even though it's a bad word. So I think that was the direction I was always going. And so opening for Sunvolt that day, it was like, holy shit. Hearing songs like that, I'm hearing people get into it. It was like, that's the feeling I want to give people. I don't know if I want to make people pump their fist anymore. I want the feeling that I'm having right now. I want to impart that on people with the shit I write and with what I make. So that put me on a path. And so when I made the decision I was going to move here, I told a really good friend of mine, Patrick Pugh. He actually designed the album cover. Brilliant graphic artist, brilliant comic book artist. And I said, I'm going to move to Portland. And when I get there, I'm not going to make the kind of music I make anymore. I'm going to make, like, Americana and roots rock music. He goes, I'll be right over. And he hangs up the phone. He shows up at my door 20 minutes later with a copy of Ryan Adams' Heartbreaker and a copy of Uncle Tupelo's No Depression. He goes, listen to these. And then he slams the door and he leaves.
Nice.
And I sat down right there and I listened to those records. And I'm like, son of a bitch, he's right. I probably just totally got off track on a tangent there. But, like, that was the progression of me as a musician. I was one kind of musician coming from playing classic rock, coming from playing in bar bands, my own music kind of, like, coming from that. There was a direction I wanted to go with what I wanted my stuff to sound like. And not only that day he brought me those CDs, but maybe even moving here, meeting some of the people that I get to play music with now, was a progression of getting to the place where I'm like, this is the music I want to make.
Well, you picked, like, three songs for us to tell us a little bit about your three influence picks.
Okay,
we can rattle these off.
Sure. I think I picked "I'm Going Down" by Bruce.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There, just because of that. because of that experience in the car. That album in the car was what it was like. Oh man, that's so cool. Like, mm-hmm. Wow, those songs are so neat. You know, at seven. And we learned the lyrics to every single one and sang them over and over again. And that became my lifelong love of Mr. Springsteen. And of course, and I figured that's probably the most country song on that album. And so great. The other one there is The Day John Henry Died is by Drive-By Truckers. And again, discovering them in 2002 in Pittsburgh at Farm Aid. And then just like hearing that kind of music, like, what is this? Like, this is country, but boy, this is different. This is a whole different kind of country. Because I was working in country radio at the time.
Oh, wow.
I was a disc jockey at a country radio station when I went to Farm Aid. So I was playing a whole lot of Kenny Chesney and Tim McGraw every day and going to this. And I think Toby Keith was at that Farm Aid. So it's like I knew what radio country sounded like. I hadn't heard anything like the Drive-By Truckers before. I'm like, wait, it can twang and rock at the same time? Like, oh, shit, let's do some of that. And then the last one is actually a big one for me is Todd Snyder's All Right Guy. That demo came out when I was a senior in high school. And again, I was like, songs can sound like this. A dude can just tell a story and it happens to rhyme, but it's just a story. You know, that's kind of the way Todd describes it too when you see him in concert. Like, it just happens to rhyme. And I actually did get to play that song on stage with Todd about 7 years ago.
Right on.
But just that was my campfire song for so long, and it still kind of makes me think about, like, that's another one of those moments, probably even before what I described earlier. I'm like, all right, I think that's the direction I want to go.
Awesome.
Well, let's get into it.
The other morning, I was hanging around in my house. I had that new book with pictures of Madonna naked. I was checking it out. Just then a friend of mine came through the door, said she'd never pegged me for a scumbag before. She said she didn't. I'm an alright guy.
I watched the rain, it settled in, disappeared for days again. Most of us were staying in, lazy like the sky. Letters flew across the wire, filtered through a million lies. The whole world smelled like burning tires the day John Henry died. They knew about that big machine that ran on human hope and steam. Bets on John, far between, mostly on the side. We heard he put up quite a fight. Turn snowy white, that hammer ran out through the night, the day John Henry died. When John Henry was a little bitty baby, nobody ever taught him how to read. But he knew the perfect way to hold a hammer was the way. We'll be right back.
Great song choices, buddy. Yeah.
Thank you.
A lot of fun.
Awesome.
I'd love to hear another new song off the album.
Oh, cool.
Would you?
So quickly?
Him playing it or something from the
I got No One Remembers Here. Can we play that one, Matthew?
Sure.
Give us a little.
Yeah, give us a backstory.
Okay, I'll give you a backstory on this one. This is the only song I feel like I had to almost credit my therapist on.
Ah.
I was talking to one of them head shrinkers, and she's like, "Well, what's bothering you today?" Mm. And I said, "Well, I was driving up here today, and I was thinking about this time when I was 16, and I was working for my dad, and there was a business dinner, and my dad couldn't be there, but I was there, and I said something stupid, and I pissed off the rep that took us all to dinner." And she's like, "You were 16. I was like, "Yeah." She goes, "You're 36, and you're still thinking about it." I'm like, "Yeah." So my outlet for that was to maybe go write a song about it. And there's a verse in the song about that evening. And so that's the line, "No one remembers but me." Like, maybe you shouldn't hang on to this shit so long.
Because now it's going to be with you forever.
Now it's going to be with me forever. By the way, Dad, sorry.
Put it on vinyl.
Now it's on wax, baby.
Put it around.
But at least you got a fucking song out.
I got a song out, and it's off his chest.
By the way, Dad, that's why that guy always acted weird when he came to the shop after that. Thanks.
Oh, that's your boy? Oh, okay. You remember that night and he said that thing?
He's a special sort of boy.
He said that thing and did the thing. And then, yeah.
Oh,
boy.
That's going to be the name of the next album. Special sort of boy. So anyway, that's this one of just hanging on to shit for too long.
Well, let's play it.
All right. Let's not hang on to it anymore.
All the stupid things I've done on me through my days, but I'm the last one hanging on. Can't put them away. Dinner parties I destroyed, 'cause my mouth was running free. I ain't half as bad as I make it sound. No one remembers but me. No one
Mark Maron does have shit on you guys. Like, this is the single greatest podcast on earth.
Mark Maron. Love that guy.
I do, too, but his podcast isn't as good as
Mark,
this one.
Come be on our podcast. I know he's listening right
now. Oh, my God.
Now.
Mark Maron in the helm?
Oh, my God. Well, did you read the article about him loving Spokane, by the way?
Yes.
Yes, I knew you did.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh,
he's going to blow up that town.
He's going to blow up that town.
Yeah.
Well, something better needs to happen in that town. Oh, did I? Shit. Okay.
Oh. Got a song about that?
I do.
Let's play a song.
I'm going to play a really old song of mine because you just mentioned Spokane. So, and this kind of relates to stuff that's going on in Portland right now. So, in fact, I need this guy right here. This is a song I wrote because I was mad that they built a mall where there used to be a park in Spokane, Washington. And now what I see what's going on in our fair city now, it seems kind of
minor.
This ain't no sleepy town. We get our wisdom from the reader board. Watch the lemmings as they gather round. They're too dumb to realize they're born. There's a street dance tonight. There's a new something new in town. Let's go out under the light, 'cause we all wanna burn it down. There's a shopping mall next to the donut shop. There's a burger joint next to the burger joint. There's a stretch of freeway and it's standing like a monument. Everybody wanna be the first to dance upon it. Street dance tonight. There's a new something new in town. Let's go out under the light, 'cause we all wanna burn it down. Chill in the air, saying autumn's near. Where will we be when the fall begins? Summer night left circles in our fields and I fear. Never gonna find that tune again. There's a street dance tonight. Something new in town. Let's go out under the light, 'cause we all wanna burn it down. Well, the vampires have taken over. I can't leave my doors unlocked no more. They're demolishing the record shop on the corner. Everyone seems to care a little less than before. There's a street dance tonight. There's a new something new in town. Let's go out under the light, 'cause we all wanna burn it down. Street dance tonight. New something new in town. Let's go out under the light, 'cause we all wanna burn it. I just wanna burn it down. I just wanna burn it down. I just wanna burn it down. I just want to burn it down.
Very nice.
All my visions of Spokane were running through my hand as you were doing that.
Mine too. Oh, never mind.
Yeah, you've never been there.
It's still a lovely town.
It still is. It really is. I mean, like any other town has its issues, but it has a lot of great things going for it.
Of course.
Yeah, I love Spokane.
Vic, Brandon, Bob, Jim, that's for you. Just wanted to say that since I played that song from the old band. I figured I should acknowledge those guys
real
quick.
Awesome. Fantastic. Nice. I think you're one of those guys that whenever I see you, you always have like a magnificent cover to play. You learn a lot of songs. And I really appreciate that. Do you want to throw one out to us?
A cover?
Yeah.
Sure. Boy, oh boy. Let me think of one to play for you.
I'm putting you on the spot, and I understand
you
that.
You a little bit. Yep. That's fine.
Well, can we play another one off his album? And
sure.
Let him give him time to think about
it? Absolutely.
Can we do that? That'd be really great.
Yeah. That's and on that note, this is called All My Fault.
Thank you. Thank you.
Matthew. All my fault. Great song.
It is all your fault.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Killer tune, and it's been great hearing the band play that.
Yep.
Quite a bit over the last.
That song predates the Paper Lion record.
Wow. Oh, really?
That song didn't make it onto Paper Lion for, I don't know, even whatever reason. I think I was afraid, like, it was. Here's a weird thing. I was afraid it was too country. You asked that earlier, like, what was different about this record than that record? I think I worried too much on that record. Mm-hmm. Even if my joke about the Nathaniel Rateliff song or me being a dick in the studio or whatever, that was all still true. But I certainly worried more on Paper Lion than I did on this album, where I was like, we're just going to put our songs out there. And at the same time, like, that's the scary part, because I certainly cleared out the cupboard on this record. There's new songs to be written, and they're not finished yet, because just about everything I've ever written has now been recorded. I've kind of gone through a bit of a writer's block the last year or so, while at the same time recording everything I had in the can. Mm-hmm. So the cupboard's bare now.
Time to fill her back up.
Time to fill her back up. Absolutely. Maybe less songs about girls.
What about one girl?
Some dudes work in watercolor. I work in shitty relationships.
That's a common theme, honestly.
From three guys that are married, if the girls are there for the taking, you should take them.
I think I made an initial demo of that song almost like 9 years ago and never put it on a record until this record. And I again have to credit the guys in my band of, like, why haven't we recorded this yet? Because I'm the guy all thinking about my craft or my art of, like, well, it's an old song and it's so country sounding. Mm-hmm. And they're like, dude, it's EU. Put it. Come on. I mean, we call it Matthew Lindley, but to me, it's very much a band. Like, those are my guys. Those are my guys. And they get me through this shit. And we made a really beautiful record together, and I'm really excited about it. I mean, I could just sit here and gush all night about how I feel about this record. I had that experience on Monday. The CDs came from CD Baby, and I immediately, like, busted the cellophane on one and threw it in the shitty CD player in the car.
Yeah,
and was like, I'm listening to my own record in my car, but it's like, God damn, we did this.
This is what you want to do.
And even better, as you heard on that one, we've got John Nyan from Stars of Cascadia playing some fiddle on that song.
Cool.
We've got Nick Foltz playing some piano on
Friends of the Podcast.
Who?
John and Nick.
Who's that guy? Who? Who's that guy, Nick? He's playing some piano on a couple songs, and they'll both be involved on October 8th. As well as big, tall, skinny Scotty Ray Jeffries playing some pedal steel with us.
Awesome.
Very nice.
As well as Mandy Allen from Stubborn Lovers, who we wanted to have on the record and last minute just couldn't get things together. But I love nothing more than singing songs with her on a microphone next to me.
She's one of our favorites in the house.
Mm-hmm.
Mandy.
And Mandy's going to be singing with us at the CD release as well.
Fantastic.
I don't know. Nothing better than the people I get to play music with these days.
What about a new one on acoustic?
A new one on acoustic. And I still owe Eric a cover. I'll figure one out.
All right.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, what about that?
Oh, you owe Eric an...
I do, but we'll...
What exactly do you owe Eric?
So the record version of this is going to have both the aforementioned Nick Foltz and the aforementioned John Nyan, but I'll play it for you right now without them. I've got all my toys over here resting on a lovely Jason Isbell vinyl record.
Easy.
My quick little VH1 storyteller story about this song is I wrote this very angrily after a bad breakup and decided it was too angry and put it aside for a long time. And then I forget which member of my band made a joke of, like, oh, your songs are about girls. And I was like, well, here's a new one for you. And I resurrected it. And it's called Ex-Girlfriend Song.
Thank you.
You made your stand. You showed me your hand. Now you can't take it back. And on the night you realize what was right, I'll be miles on down the track. The words ring thin again and again. Your tears won't make them strong. You went and wrote yourself right into another ex-girlfriend song. There's a fire growing high up to the sky. Smoke spills out, you live and you learn. Look as we close the book. Here's the part you might not have guessed. As you lie with your trade off in the bed you both made off in. Well, I can only wish you the best.
Mm-hmm. Ex-girlfriends.
We all just related. Big time.
Pretty much.
Matthew, a lot of fun having you on here, buddy.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, man.
Seriously, this is a really good time. Good stories, great songs. Tell us about that CD release party again one more time now. October 8th.
October 8th, Saturday night, October 8th, Secret Society.
Yep.
Matthew Lindley, joined by Bad Assets. and the Low Bones.
It's going to be a great night.
Not ashamed to say that the Bad Assets are my favorite band in this town.
Right on, man. Bad Assets coming up.
And
here
then the very
calendar.
Next day.
Oh. Wait,
yeah. The very next day. It's a full weekend of rock. Now, I'm telling you.
Thank you, Ann.
Thanks, Ann. Many things to thank you for this evening. I'm telling you that the Saturday night at the Secret Society is the place to be, but I'm telling you another thing.
Mm-hmm.
One more thing.
Preach it.
In the unfortunate circumstance, you cannot be at the Secret Society for the show of the year. I'm
mm-hmm.
telling you the show of the year.
Mm-hmm.
If it's just not enough, the very next day, 5 p.m., Music Millennium, the Matthew Lindley Band is going to play one more time. I get to do an in-store at Music Millennium. My name is in paint on the window of that
Beautiful.
Store right now, and I almost cried today when I saw that.
Nice.
Secret Society, Saturday night, October 8th. Bad Assets, Low Bones joining us, two of the best goddamn bands in this town, and I'm lucky enough to say they're going to play at my CD release party.
Make sure you have some cold duck.
I should be thanking them.
Killer.
What's that?
They love the cold duck.
Cold duck.
You might want to keep a little cold duck on
cold
ice.
Duck for the
cold
badasses.
Duck on ice for the badasses.
A long way.
And the very next day, 5 p.m., the old Music Millennium.
Fantastic.
God bless the Music Millennium. Thank you so much for having us. 5 p.m. the next day, we're going to play an in-store there.
Let's sell some records, baby.
Might sell a record or two if you like it.
You all heard the new songs tonight. You're going to go out and buy a record.
Yeah, man.
This podcast solves all that.
So
you heard
actually
the
best description I ever heard. I got to meet Curtis Elgato once.
Yeah.
And he was just about to put out a new record. And he's like, and I was like, hey, Curtis, I heard you got a new record. And he goes, it's mean, man. It's real mean. So if I could say anything, I would say
exactly
Late
like
Bloomer
it.
By Matthew Lindley. It's mean, man. It's a
real
mean
record.
Awesome. Yeah, man.
Sing us out of here, brother.
Sing us out of here. This ain't mine. This is for Eric Cotilla. And everybody in the Hoot family. I grew up west of the tracks, holding me to hold you back. Upstairs she's calling out my name. Said, boy, won't you go outside? Got a man coming over tonight. Seventh one in 7 days. Go down parking lot, hang out with all of my friends. Wait till the dawn brings the peace again. Come in 6 a.m., she is waiting for me. She says, where have you been? I said I was out. She said you're no good cause you're running without love. I'm going straight to hell, just like my mama said. I'm going straight to hell. I'm going straight to hell, just like my mama said. Black widow and the ladies' man met me down at the laundromat, and they tried to help me understand. Seems the neighborhood was all in a stir about what they might have heard. Sort it out and spread it round, it seems. Next door, girl, she lives
same age as me. Asked if I would come upstairs for a seat. Just then her mother bust in and said, "You're that son of a bitch in the wind. Get out of my house, hit the road." And I kept falling like a rose.